Raised on D&D Podcast helps to enrich your family's gaming experience by bringing you interviews with parents, educators, game designers, and influencers. Join us as we delve into the many ways that tabletop role-playing games inspire creativity, develop communication skills, and create long-lasting bonds among players. Your host has been an avid gamer since childhood, and now his kids are being raised on D&D. Here is your host, Nick Cardarelli.
Welcome back, gamers. I'm your host, Nick Cardarelli, and this is Raised on D&D. My next guest is from North Alabama. He's on TikTok answering D&D questions, making content, and sharing highlights from his own games. He works with his in-person D&D group to run games for over 30 students from the local middle and high school. You know him on D&D TikTok as DM by Choice. Please welcome Mitch Ressler. Hi, Mitch.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
Hey, thanks for being on the show. We're super excited. Love all the content you're putting on D&D TikTok and want to know so much more about what you're doing there in Alabama with the high school and middle schoolers, showing them Dungeons & Dragons and TTRPGs. But before we jump into all that, Mitch, can you take us back to your first experience with tabletop role-playing games, where your love for D&D really began?
Yeah, in about high school age for me. Me and a bunch of my friends, we were really big, grew up in the local theater here. So this, we already kind of got into sort of, you know, the acting and kind of role-playing stuff that we really enjoyed. And there was a cast party after a rehearsal or show where one of the guys in our group, he actually wanted to give a try running a game called Legend of the Five Rings.
Okay.
And it's kind of set like this feudal Japan setting. And so we opened the book and kind of got into it and really, really enjoyed, you know, playing the game. From there, one of the dads of our friend group kind of got wind on us playing the game. And he said, well, hey, if you guys like this, give a try and play, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, because he had done it kind of from way, way back in the day. And so he ran the games. We all got around the table and we played consistently like every Saturday for like a year and a half.
Wow.
On this wildly expanding homebrew game that he kind of got to mix and match all his kind of stuff and put it to the game. So kind of once we really got started into that homebrew, you know, the hooks were in, as you could say, you know, playing D&D and other games.
That is phenomenal. So when do you get behind the Dungeon Master screen? When do you make the decision that, you know what, I'm going to give this a try?
Not too long after it. It was, you know, you kind of get brainstorming on your own stuff where you kind of watching TV and movies and other media you kind of consume. And after a while, your brain can't help but kind of start turning it into D&D story arcs. You're like, you know what, this would be really kind of cool to kind of play. And so, you know, back in, you know, high school, we have a whole lot more free time than we know what to do with. So if anyone says like, hey, I want to try giving this a go, everybody's down for it. And it was, man, like, I remember like the first couple sessions, like I felt like they went absolutely horrendous, you know, cause you have this idea of how it's going to go, but, it inevitably does not. But everybody had a good time and they keep, you know, coming back to play more. So it couldn't have been that bad. But, you know, the more you do it, you kind of really kind of settle in. And so I found myself really enjoying. I mean, I like both sides, playing and running the game. But if given the choice, I like the DM chair.
People on TikTok know you as DM by Choice, and you kind of made a video about this of why you're called that. But can you share with our listeners real quick why it is that you enjoy being behind the screen?
Sure. DM by Choice. Well, kind of like you said, like a lot of people like the term forever DM or the guy who everybody wants to play, but no one wants to run it because whatever the reason is, whether they feel like they don't have the skill set to do it like any kind of good job, or they don't know enough about the rules, or, you know, whatever kind of roadblock kind of gets them, not a whole lot of people vie for that position. But this is the DM chair is something I really enjoy doing. So like if given the choice, I will choose to be the DM versus being a player, just kind of up in the game. Like, I've always got ideas for games I want to run. So, you know, given enough table time, I'm never going to get through all the stuff I want to do. So I guess that's a good problem to have. But it's, I like kind of facilitating the story, and I like seeing where I can get the players and get some cool stuff back from them, because it's not just me telling the story. I kind of like want to kick off and facilitate what the other people can also bring to the table, because those are some of my great moments where you're able to kind of draw a little bit out of your players, where they kind of get to let their guard down a little bit and really kind of get into character. And you have those really good storytelling moments, or you have a good combat and everybody's just on the edge of their seat and they're invested in what's going on, and somebody does something really awesome and the whole table just, you know, gets up in cheers when someone gets a nat 20. Just to kind of know that, you know, you can kind of help bring that to the table is really very satisfying for me. So even if I'm playing for a while, you kind of got to get that itch. I'm like, man, it's about time for me to start running the game again. Even outside of just having like a cool table moment, like every now and then, like one of my favorite things that happened was after a game of running, we were all going to our cars. This was sometime last year. And one of the players on the way out said, man, I'm really glad I came tonight. Like, I almost didn't. Like, I've really had a bad couple of days, and it's just, I was not feeling it, but I showed up anyway, and I was just in the mood to just show up and kill bad guys. And nothing like particularly special happened in this one session, but it was something that he really needed to do to get in with his friends and have some fun and just kind of unplug a little bit. And like, after we were done, you could tell like his countenance had changed. So, you know, to be able to give that kind of outlet where it's a little bit of like a mental health kind of help for some people. I know sometimes it is for me. To know that I can help somebody out like that, it's just gravy on top of the fun that we have.
That's fantastic. And you know, you're absolutely right. Being able to unplug, a lot of people don't realize until they start gaming. Until they start experiencing it. When some people go to a 3.5 hour superhero movie or Lord of the Rings film festival, you go there and you're like, and you're telling folks who've never experienced it before, yes, we watched this movie for 3.5 hours. And they go, 3.5 hours? What? How could you do that for 3.5 hours? But when they experience it when it's over, you go, oh, is it already over? Oh, what time is it? And a good tabletop role-playing game Dungeons and Dragons session is just like that, where 3.5, 4 hours, 5 hours go by, and when it's over, you're like, wait, no, we can't end on here. This isn't a one-shot, right? We're going to campaign this. I'm going to level up. Are we going to come back for more? That is an incredible feeling. Now, Mitch, you were mentioning to me earlier that you had something a little different with your in-person group, where you guys actually do rotating dungeon masters. Now, can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, we actually have a unique setup, or just we're lucky enough to where at least half of our play group are DMs. And so, you know, we're kind of, everybody kind of gets, throws ideas of like, hey, I want to run this, or like, I want to do this, it'd be cool. So no one person is just forever in the DM chair. We're kind of on a little bit of a rotation where, you know, someone will run a module or something. And then once that's done, we have two or three other DMs with stories that they're waiting in the wings to go and play. So it's really kind of interesting to have that opportunity where, you know, you're going to be able to get to play in some stuff, because some DMs, as much as they love it, they kind of want to play sometimes too. And you know, we're able to afford everybody that opportunity. But it's also really interesting, both as a DM and as a player, to know you've got a bunch of experienced DMs at your table where they kind of know or are very familiar with aspects of storytelling and building character development and doing that yes and idea for improv, where everybody kind of knows, like when certain breadcrumbs or threads are kind of thrown out there, people with that kind of experience, they'll take it and they'll just run with it. No one kind of like, okay, this is going to pan out later, or I can do something really cool with this and contribute to the story. So knowing you have those resources and those people that are kind of looking for that stuff at the table adds a whole lot more opportunity and complex layers in storytelling that it has been really fun to enjoy.
Just incredible. And to have that kind of dynamic at the table where everyone is cognitive of the story elements and then not just aware of it, but are like, how can I make this even better? Must make for amazing experiences. I think that's phenomenal.
Have that mindset too, where having been a DM at some point, you know it's a team game. And so you're not having to kind of manage a table full of players that their primary mindset is just what they're trying to accomplish or do as their character. They know that they don't want to dominate the table time and they want to bring in other characters or find ways to engage the guy across the table who's not as experienced or a little shy or isn't necessarily as comfortable. Like they'll kick that off as a player for a game that you're running. So it's very much a group mindset where you don't have to jockey for table time.
Now, a lot of folks are wondering, with the kind of experience that you're talking about at your gaming table, this in-person group of friends, are these the folks from way back in high school? Have you guys been gaming this entire time together?
My in-person group is not. I've been playing with these guys for about 2 years. This was when the onset of COVID hit. I'm an introvert by nature. So when you're kind of at the house and you really can't go anywhere, you kind of think, I am more apt to handle this than most anybody else. I should be fine. Well, that was not the case for me. You know, it's the 2-3 weeks in, you're fine. But when you're hitting like week 6 and 7, it starts to really kind of hit you. So, you know, I found where I needed some kind of outlet. And I wasn't like super heavy into D&D at this point in time. Just because of ebb and flow of stuff. But thankfully, my wife had a friend of hers whose husband played in this game group. And they're like, hey, you know, we'll put you in contact with these guys. And, you know, you all are kind of in the same nerdy stuff. You'll go have fun. And I'm like, you know, sure, okay. And then plugged in with them. And they were extremely welcoming. And, you know, everybody kind of had a lot of common threads to where 2 weeks in, it felt like I had been there for months. Awesome. I was really, really fortunate to kind of find an in-person group that kind of helped kind of bring me out of that heavy funk I was in when COVID started, because it was not a good time, but these guys helped kind of bring out of that.
That is amazing. So, and now you also game online. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Online, an interesting thing about COVID again is online D&D has surged like nothing else. And where the group that I started playing with back in high school, we're most of us still stay friends in contact today. And we still run some games online, even though since then we've all spread to the four winds and we're in different states, different time zones. We get together. Sometimes there's a Monday night game that I play and then a Thursday night game that I run. We get together once a week and we play for about two and a half hours each week. And some of these guys are guys I played with on that initial game. So, you know, playing with them for years and still able to kind of do that, I think is really kind of special because, well, one, not everybody gets to have friendships that last that long just because, you know, life happens and circumstances change, but to keep that hobby kind of going with one another that we started way back when we were kids, that's also really cool to be able to say.
That's incredible. And, you know, one of the things we talk about on Raised on D&D a lot is the fact that those bonds that we make at the table, whether it's virtual or in person, they can last years. You know, the people that we gamed with in high school and college, you may go years because of life without talking to each other. But when you come back around, it's always that, hey, remember that one time with the troll? And, you know, you're right back there in the moment with them. And that kind of bond is one of the things that made me want to raise my children on Dungeons and Dragons, because of that connection that it can make. Mitch, you've been gaming now for a long time. You've got an in-person group, you're gaming online, but you guys have done something unique, and you've brought Dungeons and Dragons to teenagers at your local middle and high schools. Tell us how that got started and how you got involved in that.
This has been kind of an interesting story. One of the guys in our group is a local pastor who also works a lot with the kids through the high school, like through, you know, doing kind of like a counseling kind of position, where one of the kids who's in the band came to him and said, like, hey, like, I heard, you know, you have a D&D group. And he said, well, yeah. He said, like, well, I've kind of run a game for my friends here, but somehow all these other people, all these kids through the school, have come to him and expressed interest on wanting to learn and wanting to play. And it's a sizable group of kids. And he's like, I can't run games for these many kids. So knowing that you play this group, do you think like you and the guys in your group would want to help out and run games? And so he kind of coordinated sort of between us and him. And we kind of did this one night where we said, you know what, we'll run a bunch of one shots and see what kind of response we get, because, you know, we don't know if everybody says they're interested, but when it comes time to actually put a date and see who shows up, we have no idea what to expect.
Right.
That first night we were in kind of this large game room that we kind of play in at this guy's house. And we had five tables that were all full running all at the same time. And wow. Most of these kids had never played D&D before ever. And so it was all one shots that we had created. And again, this kind of helped because, again, most of us are DMs in our own right. So we didn't have to try to train up or bring people in who had little to no experience, who didn't know what we were doing. And we had 25 plus kids on that first day. And we all thought, like, well, it seemed to go okay. And then a couple of days later, our guy followed up with the kid who kind of got started up. So like, everybody just absolutely loved it. They want to know when we can come back and play some more. We got messages, some from some of the parents saying, like, my kid came home and they were talking, you know, all about this thing and how much they loved it. And like, everybody was just excited and stoked by just night one. So we're like, okay, well, we've got a really cool opportunity here to facilitate this thing that we love to kids who are interested and kind of pass it down a little bit. But we also wanted to kind of take this as an opportunity to be a positive influence on kids who may feel different or don't have somewhere to kind of plug in. Just people who play D&D in general kind of lends itself to some folks who don't feel they have a group to plug in with unless it's at the D&D table. So yeah, we wanted to have some kind of outlet for these kids who may not have positive adult influences to have somewhere where they can go for a few hours and find that and make friends with kids they wouldn't normally see outside of whatever class or hobby that they're in. So we've been doing this, God, I think this month might mark like a year that we first started.
Wow.
Where it's a mix of kids from middle and high school. And we meet just about once a month to play D&D. And we've since we did two initial days of one shots, and kids kept coming back and being regulars. So we're like, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to run campaigns. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've got a Curse of Strahd game. We've got two homebrews, an Eberron game. I'm running Call of the Netherdeep. I mean, it's these long, extensive stories that the same kids keep coming back on the same table, and they're just having a blast.
Mitch, tell us a little bit about the positive aspects of what you've seen going on with your teens group. Tell us a little bit about how you've kind of seen how the teens have maybe grown or adjusted as this year of running games has gone on.
They've learned a lot, and a lot of it is more than just the rules and mechanics of the game, because when we start off, you're kind of like the basics of how to do it. But one of the interesting things about stuff like D&D and other tabletop games is there's no right one way to solve a problem. And so when you give kind of the situation and there's not like a clear exit strategy, I'm always curious to see what crazy shenanigans these kids come up with. And it's really kind of interesting because my table is one of the younger ones. They're all middle schoolers, or most of them are middle schoolers. And I've got three druids out of this group, which I'm like, okay, this is cool. And then like later on, like I'm sitting there like anticipating the headache I'm going to get when, you know, they all take, you know, summon woodland creatures and I have, you know, six swarms of insects and eight bullfrogs to keep up with in addition to all the bad guys. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And they take dives into rabbit holes and stuff where there was an encounter where it was just, the book lays it out as just sort of like a pit stop you take on your journey to the place you're trying to go. And all these druids who have this wild shape ability where they can turn into other animals, they get this harebrained idea that they're going to wild shape into really cute puppies and then sell these puppies to these people at this rest stop. And then like, well, you know, while we're there, we'll just wander off into the woods and then change back into ourselves. And then we'll just leave, having conned them out of this money. And we're like, okay, we'll see how this goes. And I even like laid out the most sad sap stories for these people that they're trying to sell puppies to see if they'll go through with it. And they do. And so, and then, you know, of course, your plan never goes according to plan how you normally think. So it was, there's this concept, we're going to lay out the story, and then you kind of play out a little bit of like, okay, well, realistically, this would happen. What are you going to do? And then, okay, because this happens, then this happens. What are you going to do? And so seeing them get their wheels turning on all this problem solving and what kind of stuff they would do in their character, you know, is interesting to kind of see them really develop and evolve, because it's a lot of, some of the kids, I've got like one or two kind of initially kind of quiet ones who sit in there, and then the troublemakers at the table kind of bring them into it, and it kind of brings them out of their shell a little bit into getting involved in the messy shenanigans that are just hysterical to watch them react to.
One of the things that comes up a lot when we talk about young people playing tabletop role-playing games and Dungeons and Dragons is how it opens up a curiosity for history, how things work. They start exploring different avenues of creativity when it comes to the hobby, like painting miniatures and drawing their own maps and writing their own stories. Have you seen over the last year with the monthly get-togethers with the teens, have you seen that? And of course, one of the ultimate levels of involvement is those teens saying, I think I'm ready to get behind the screen. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's been interesting to kind of see them take like their initial ideas for their characters and then work with each other to develop like a shared backstory and kind of flesh out where their characters come from. I've got five characters at my table, three of whom are all sisters, and they're all Genasi. So they're all, and each one is influenced from an element. So people who aren't familiar with Genasi backgrounds, you're this kind of a human looking person, but you have like this influence from one of the four elements. So, you know, earth, air, fire, water. So they're all sisters and they each have their own element, and they are just kind of playing with this cool story of kind of how they're developing out of wherever they came from. And they're curious and asking questions about the world that they're in. So the game I run called The Netherdeep, I chose it specifically because it comes from the setting that the show Critical Role is based in. And so I'm like, you know what, if these kids are interested, maybe they're watching the most popular D&D show on you know, the internet. So if it's familiar to them, we'll take it and they can kind of play with something that they've heard of before. Or if not, I get to explain and go through all this and kind of bring them into a rich established world already. And so to see them kind of ask questions as to kind of, you know, how different cities might be related, or kind of the history of the world that they're playing in, like they're interested and want to know. They're and rather than just, you know, get the quest, take the thing and travel to the place and defeat the bad guy, they want to know about where they are and what stuff means. It was interesting. We had like a session where I described this family of goblins that was living on the back of this giant horizon-backed turtle, which is this large turtle where on the back of its shell, they've kind of built like this extensive kind of treehouse set up on the back of it. And then they ride this turtle around the, you know, the land, kind of like an RV of sorts. And it wasn't even the end of the day. Like I gotten home and there's like, each table has their own kind of chat and group me where we can send out like updates and information about where we're playing. But one person at the table had actually found like a picture of a horizon back turtle and sent it back out to the rest of the players, just to kind of like, they love this concept of this big turtle with this stuff on the back of it. And so when the picture came through, like inside of me, I went, yes, they're interested. They care. They think it's cool. So to see them kind of really get excited about something that you personally enjoy and that you can kind of share this love for the hobby with someone who discovers a lot of the stuff for the first time. It's really fun to see their excitement and love for it. It kind of reminds you of the initial feeling you had when you initially got into it. So to share this with a new generation of kids coming up is a joyful opportunity that I didn't anticipate getting into, but I love the fact that I found myself there.
That is wonderful. And I can't agree with you more. Getting to introduce new players to the game, to the hobby, is one of the best feelings a dungeon master can have. When I get to run adult groups about once a quarter. And when I do, I always try to have somebody come in who's never experienced Dungeons and Dragons or tabletop role-playing games before. So I think it does a couple of things for us as dungeon masters too. If I said to you, you know, you see a pack of gnolls come out of the forest, roll for initiative, you know, that's real simple to say. But when you have that new player at the table, they always kind of slowly raise their hand and say, I'm sorry, what's a gnoll? And so
what came out of the forest?
Right. And so as a dungeon master, it helps you to kind of get into that mindset of description and not taking it for granted that the players, you know, it's not just a pack of goblins. It's 2.5 feet tall, green or orange, sharp teeth, snarling primitives pouring out of the forest in waves. I mean, that's a much better description, makes for a much better game. And a lot of that is because we've got the newer players there at the table going, what are we looking at? Why is everyone concerned or not concerned? Should I be concerned? So,
well, that's something you want to, I think you want to try to develop as a DM, is not assume your players know everything. Because even even if you have a mix of veteran players and rookies at your table, and you do this kind of setting description of, you know, going through this dark forest and you hear snarls and yips out of the shadows, and, you know, you go into this thing of the teeth, everybody kind of has that same feeling of, oh no, what are we about to run in face to face here? And then even as they come out and you do the description of, you know, the tribal armor and war paint and patchy mangy fur and, you know, all this, even if you're doing your description, you might get your experienced players just as immersed in the moment as your new ones, where they might not necessarily think, oh, it's just a gnoll. Like, that's, you know, they're not that big of a deal. And then kind of in the middle of combat, they realize, oh, hey, these are gnolls. Like, it's, you know, it kind of takes them out of the chair a little bit and puts them into the headspace of the character. Mm-hmm. So kind of what you as a, you know, a veteran of however many years that you play or even run, something that I would say that helps everybody at the table is don't assume they know what it is. You know, just kind of go from the ground up and build it up and, you know, explain and give, you know, your sensory stuff, and you kind of help build that, because it really does a good job of setting the scene.
Mitch, you got some amazing content there on TikTok as DM by choice. What are some of the projects or things that you're working on right now that you're excited to tell us about?
Well, some of the stuff I put on there is sort of kind of highlight reels from the games that we do in person. So coming up on the in-person stuff is our last session of our Curse of Strahd game, which I'm looking forward to, and I don't know how it's going to go because our characters have taken some very dark turns in an effort to gain what we need to do to defeat Strahd. So I don't know who, if anybody, will be walking away. So wrapping that up, I'm looking forward to a successful conclusion. But that also means we've got a Call of Cthulhu and a Wild Beyond the Witchlight game waiting in the wings that we're going to be transitioning to. So we've got some really cool stories coming up that I'm curious to kind of talk about. I'm working on the DM for our Monday night game. He does something kind of special where when our players have birthdays, he does kind of non-canon one-shots for our characters. So like we've done stuff like our characters are running a bed and breakfast and we have a murder mystery we have to solve. We just finished running a Gilligan's Island themed kind of adventure. But his birthday comes up in January, so I'm going to be the one running the birthday one-shot for him. So as a special kind of thing, we're all going to be getting together in person to play this game. It'll be the first time we've all shared the table together, and I'm going to be running a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles themed one-shot for the game.
That is phenomenal.
I'm looking forward to running that, so I'm going to be doing, you know, all the progress and you know, how the execution goes for that. But I also like doing fun stuff on TikTok, you know, brainstorming ideas or inspiration that I get, or tips as players or DMs, stuff that, you know, I found out that helps me, or I see people asking questions about, and I try to throw out, you know, just interesting stuff that might help people either overcome kind of like a hang up or give them like a good suggestion, or just find a way to possibly enjoy the game more.
One of the greatest things about the D&D and the tabletop role-playing game community, especially D&D TikTok, is how helpful everybody is. A lot of people don't realize it, but the gaming community is a welcoming community. We're positive, we're helpful. Dungeon masters share their secrets. Players share their min-maxing and their optimizations. I mean, it's a great community to be a part of. And I think that as a parent, as a gamer of over 30 years, I'm so glad that tabletop role-playing games has become so popular and so mainstream. And I'm so grateful that so many people are now in it, including my family, their friends, and even our buddies from high school. So It's fantastic. Mitch, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. I can't thank you enough for your content on TikTok. I hope you keep making it, and we look forward to the stuff that's coming out next.
This has been a real blast to do. I thank you for the opportunity to get to chat with it. Anything I can do to talk more about D&D, I'm always on board for.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Raised on D&D Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow on all your favorite apps and social media.